welcome to the Civic Flame Campfire Edition. As I mentioned in my introduction podcast, because we're dealing with a lot of heavy legal stuff, we do go section by section of the Constitution, article by article of the Constitution, amendment by amendment to the Constitution. That might mean in the couple weeks it takes to get through all that, some stuff happens in the real world. So when that stuff happens, I'm going to call a campfire, bring everybody in, put out a bonus episode that has to do with whatever event is happening right now. And so I saw this on Instagram. It was shared by an AP government teacher in Oklahoma who is on TikTok, doing the Lord's work, by the way, at Aaron Michael Baker. And what he's doing is trying to bring civic education to younger people, people on TikTok. I am also on TikTok. I am at Dr. Fun Sponge. I'm also at Dr. Fun Sponge on Blue Sky. And so you can follow me there. I have 5 whole followers on TikTok, and I assure you I have zero idea what I'm doing. But Mr. Baker does have an idea what he's doing. And so he has shared this information with everybody. And a couple things that we want to talk about. Now, as a reminder, or I guess for the first time, since this is our first one, these campfires are unscripted. I don't have a script in front of me. I'm just talking to you about what I saw. If I misrepresent anything and I found out about it later, I'll come back and fix it and I'll let you know. But from what I've seen, from what I understand, the superintendent of schools in Oklahoma required a Bible to be placed in all schools in Oklahoma. So because he's the AP Gov teacher, right, he's the threat to the school, those pesky government and civics professors teaching people how the government work. He's the threat to the school, so he gets the Bible. And there's the first problem of this, which is the First Amendment, right? The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and I'm just grabbing my Constitution here because I don't have it memorized. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Now, that's the first part of the First Amendment. It goes on to talk about freedom of press, speech, etc. But think about what we're saying here. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. The free exercise of religion in the United States is contingent on the Establishment Clause, right? As long as the government doesn't tip the scale towards or against one religion, we are all able to exercise our religion freely. The government can't stop us, they can't establish, and so forth. So a big problem right away is saying the Bible has to be in every school in the United States, right? Or at least in Oklahoma, although the end goal is the United States. The second problem is the Bible itself, and that's actually where Mr. Baker gets to, but we'll come up to that in a minute because I have a preceding problem. The second problem is I believe it's idolatry, which is forbidden in Christianity. And why I believe this is, first and foremost, the Bible shouldn't be in a classroom as a symbol of coercion or control, right? That's not acceptable. If you're teaching a religion class or a world religion class, then of course the Bible as a text in that religious class is appropriate. But simply acting as though putting a Bible in class is going to do anything other than tip the scales of the free exercise clause is very concerning. And so there's the idolatry nature from that angle. There's also the idolatry nature from the fact that the Bible that Mr. Baker showed actually listed Donald Trump as the president of the United States on the cover of the Bible. Now, that is really problematic on a number of levels. It's also the King James version of the Bible, which many biblical scholars say is not translated correctly. The King James version is not the version that I have. That version is downstairs. I can go tell you what version I have if you're interested, but it's not the version I have. But it is written deliberately to entrench the power of the king, right? This is why it is the King James version. King James helped commission this Bible. And so you have the dual nature of the type of Bible that it is, the fact that a political leader's signature or name is emblazoned on the Bible, that is really deeply problematic, not just from a separation of church and state standpoint, but from a religious faith standpoint. The idea that Christianity is so massively important to the world, and yet somehow America owns it, somehow a party owns it, somehow a political leader owns it, should be worrying to everybody of the Christian faith, right? It should be worrying to people around the world. And so to me, it is a wholly inappropriate thing to have there. The other issue with this is these come from a company that, at least for a little while, I don't know if it is still true, that Donald Trump had a financial stake in. The Bibles that the Oklahoma school required a Bible that had the Pledge of Allegiance, the Bill of Rights, and the U.S. Constitution in it. And the only Bible that did that is the one that had Donald Trump's name on it. And of course, because those documents don't go together, right? Which brings me to my other problem. The founding documents of this nation are sacred to me in a different way than any religious text is sacred to me. I have spent my life reading and caring about and endeavoring to protect the public knowledge of the founding documents of our country. I have an entire section of my American government class at any university I teach it, an entire section of my constitutional law class are dedicated specifically to the founding documents themselves. Later, we go on and we talk about all of the issues and how they relate to the founding documents, but they are separate from a religious text, and they are not meant to be a religious text. They are political texts. So not only are you putting a religious book in a political context, but you're putting political texts in a religious book. It sends a really bad example, especially today when we have such major problems with Christian nationalism. And remember, if you hear Christian nationalism and you bristle because you're Christian, you're probably not a Christian nationalist, especially if you're Catholic, if you are a Universalist Unitarian. Christian nationalism has very little to do with Christianity and everything to do with control and national power. It's a religious supremacy movement funded by billionaires like Elon Musk's and J.D. Vance's friend Peter Thiel and so on, who very much, and Peter Thiel has said this, want to kind of replace democracy with tech-led autocracy. And so there's a whole financial backing. I could do many longer episodes on this, but I just want to get it on your radar. Because there's a political economy problem here, right? But I don't want to put on my political economy hat right now. What I also want to talk about is what Mr. Baker talks about in his class, in his Bible as well, is it's the wrong constitution. So it's the wrong constitution. This is so wild because it's the wrong constitution. And the point of it was to put the constitution in there. And why am I saying it's the wrong constitution? Because it is, right? Because it is a constitution that stops after the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. I'm going to get you a reference track that I put up where I will read this Bill of Rights to you. I didn't like the sound quality last time. One of my daughters changes the grain on my microphone very often. And that can upset me. And so I'll read that to you at some point. But it is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. This is part of the compromise between the Federalists, who want a Constitution due to the failure of the Articles of Confederation, and the Anti-Federalists, who don't want a Constitution. They want a Bill of Rights. The Federalists say, no, we can't have a Bill of Rights because people will think those are the only rights they have, when in reality, the people have all the rights. What we need is a constitution that binds the government. And the anti-federalists say, no, we need a Bill of Rights because we need it to be very clear places where the government absolutely cannot operate. And so the compromise is, yes, constitution for the federalists, yes, Bill of Rights for the anti-federalists. Now, the constitution itself is ratified in 1787, 1788. And then you get, by the end, the 10th Amendment, which is the end of the Bill of Rights, is ratified in the 1790s, 1791, I believe. And so you have a lot of stuff going on here. First and foremost, Article 5 of the Constitution says when we amend something, it becomes part of the Constitution. It's a very short article. And so what it says is that if you pass the amendment through regular means, that it becomes, and I'm quoting here, valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, right? So that's the issue. It becomes a valid part of our Constitution from the moment that the amendment is allowed. And so the idea that we've left out Amendments 12 through 27 or 28, it's currently unclear whether we have a 28th Amendment at all, but we definitely have a 27th Amendment. So Amendments 11 through 27 don't count, which is fun because 27th Amendment allows Congress to give itself a raise. So we could take that one back. But this is, I think, deliberate. I don't think this is something that accidentally happens. I think when we've already seen the government over the summer take parts of the Constitution off of the federal government website and then claim it was a coding error. That's not, I've done coding, right? I worked as a online content and marketing manager, and that's not how coding works. And so, you know, just doing the copy, the kind of copywriting that would be what you would do for the case of the Constitution. But you really need to think about the fact that you have slavery. Slavery ends with the 13th Amendment, but you also have things like the Electoral College and the election of the president that are in the 12th Amendment. You have the 14th Amendment, which fundamentally alters the United States Constitution through the Due Process Clause, through the Equal Protection Clause, and what should be through the Privileges and Immunities Clause, although technically we have the Supreme Court to blame for why that's not a huge part of our law. But we also have voting rights for Black men, 15th Amendment, voting rights for women, 19th Amendment, voting rights for anybody 18 and over, right, is 26th Amendment. 22nd Amendment, which limits the number of terms that the president can serve, is also in there. So we really have this whole important constitutional structure that it seems like some people are very interested in overwriting. And why I say this is deliberate is also because within the Constitution itself, in the very first article, which I know on this podcast, we've only just started getting into. We got into Article 1, Section 1 next week or this week coming up. But I'm reading from my Constitution. Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3 talks about what is called the three-fifths compromise. This was the compromise for how do we count enslaved people for purposes of political representation when they can't vote. So the compromise is they'll be counted as three-fifths of a person. That is put in brackets in my Constitution. If you go to my favorite place to read the Constitution, the National Constitution Center's website, it's highlighted because when you click on it, it lets you know the same thing the brackets in my Constitution let you know. This was changed by the 13th Amendment. This is no longer the case. In the sort of idolatry Constitution, or the idolatry Bible, as I talk about it, that's not there. It's not in brackets. It just simply exists, the three-fifths compromise. It can sound like I have a tinfoil hat and a big old board with, you know, a red string connecting all these dots behind me. And I don't. I have a picture of George Carlin, which you can make of that what you will. But it's not crazy. These people, if you go and you go to Wikipedia, you read the Seven Mountains Mandate, right? You go, there's a graphic novel of Project 2025, which I highly recommend. But if you go look up Project 2025, if you go listen to the public remarks of people like Curtis Yarvin, of Peter Thiel, of, you know, even J.D. Vance, you really can hear quite a lot of discussion about bringing the United States back. And when they say back, they don't mean like, you know, back to the 1950s when the work week was 35 hours a week and corporations paid 90% of their taxes. What they mean is back to when they didn't have to deal with the rest of us, right? People with money who were primarily male, primarily white, didn't have to live in democracy with those of us who wanted, you know, social programs in exchange for our taxes. And they, with this Constitution, they show one more time that they mean that very literally, in a very legal sense. This should concern you. I mean, especially if you are somebody who is not covered by the Constitution in 1791. So if you are a white property-owning male, you were covered. If you are anybody else, you are not covered. And remember, you couldn't vote till you're 26. So you weren't, even if you own property and you're young, but, you know, our economy is really bad. Nobody young owns property anymore. If you own property and you're young, you don't count. And so we want to think about what's going on there in terms of the Constitution. As I've said on this program, I love the Constitution. We want to understand it. But we also do want to understand the fact that it is words on paper, unless it's what we do, right? Linda Monk writes a book called The Words We Live By. And she says the Constitution is nothing if it is not the words we live by. And boy, isn't that the truth, right? The Constitution is a living, breathing document, whether you believe that in terms of legal theory or not doesn't matter. It is in terms of we the people are the guardians of this Constitution. It is enacted in our name. It is our responsibility to do something about it. And so, you know, you should be really concerned, even if somebody who is doing something you like violates the Constitution for other people, understand that every violation is a pathway to another violation. You don't give power to a person, you give power to an office. You don't give power to a party, you give power to an office. You don't give power to a social idea, you give power to a law and a legal system that will eventually be for something you don't like, or in the hands of somebody you don't like, or for somebody who doesn't like you, or in the hands of somebody who doesn't like you. It is desperately important that we fight at every chance these nonsense policies, these ideas that people say, oh, I'm going to wave the Bible at somebody and they're going to ignore the fact that I am overturning their constitutional rights. Christians should find that horrifying. They should be deeply and truly offended that any political leader, in particular one who has the, you know, very real criminal track record legally and other ways that Donald Trump has, that their name is on a constitution. I never got along with George W. Bush, but I believe very firmly that George W. Bush was a Republican, was a conservative, was a Christian, but he never put his name on a Bible either. And if he had, I would have had a problem with it, right? The idea that this is okay really does feed into this very concerning, it's small, but frankly, any is too many. This narrative that Donald Trump is somehow chosen by God is somehow going to help kind of bring about, you know, all of these good things. And it's like, there's a whole part of the Bible that kind of deals with questions of, you know, believing your own eyes and your own ears, and some real theological questions about, in this day and age, with the way social media makes us angry, would we recognize, you know, what looks like an antichrist? Or would we just be like, oh, that's just good marketing? And I'm one of the people who doesn't believe in an antichrist. I believe there are many. It's a theological distinction, I guess. But it's like, to me, it's like, okay, you can't, like, all of these signs of, like, what you would say is the collapse of civilization. To me, religious texts are written by the smartest people of their times, whether they are correct theologically or not. We learn a lot socially from them. And what we learn a lot socially is saying people in power will abuse that power. People on the ground should recognize that abuse of power when it is, because you deserve, you know, good things. People should be cool to each other. All of this, like, very common functioning social stuff. And so when we see the government using the Bible and the Constitution to weaponize against certain people or promote certain ideas, we should be really concerned, because it goes against both biblical ideas and constitutional ideas. And as I said, this is one that is unscripted. This is one where I just sit down at my desk. And so you are maybe hearing my cat in the background, who has told me it is time to wrap up because she is done waiting for me to come over and give her a scratch. So I'm going to go scratch Cassiopeia Cassian. And you keep reading your Constitution, keep pushing back against people. And I will catch you at the Civic Flame for Article 1, Section 1 on Thursday, or at another campfire, depending on what kind of crazy event comes next. Take care. The Civic Flame is a Dr. Fun Sponge production in collusion with our sound editor, Matthew Munyon.